Welcome to the DA50 Global Convention, our very first, and we are 50 years old. My name is Roger. I'm a grateful member of Debtors Anonymous and the chairperson for this opening session. I'm also currently the chair of the General Service Board of DA. On behalf of our entire convention committee, we are deeply honored and grateful that you are here with us today as we celebrate 50 years of recovery, service, fellowship, and spiritual transformation in Debtors Anonymous. Our opening session is a legacy of hope from the founders of from our founders to the future of DA. This theme reminds us that we stand on the shoulders of courageous members who came before us, people who dared to believe recovery from compulsive debting was possible. To acknowledge the late founder of DA, John H. And most recently, our very first GSB chair, who served 40 years ago, Donald A., who passed away a couple of months ago, and the many, many others who have served in various roles throughout the world in this wonderful fellowship. Because of their honesty, willingness, and service, countless lives have been transformed. Today, we honor that legacy while looking ahead with hope, responsibility, and faith for future generations of DA members yet to come. Whether you are brand new to DA or have been part of this fellowship for decades, your presence matters. This convention belongs to all of us. And today, across countries, languages, and cultures, we
We
gather
gather
today united by recovery, fellowship, and the shared experience that no one has to face compulsive debting alone. So, a few Zoom etiquettes and housekeeping. Your microphone will be muted during the speaker's shares. You're encouraged to keep your camera on if you're comfortable with that. Please use the chat respectively when it's opened in the spirit of fellowship. The session speakers will be recorded according to our convention guidelines. And we ask everyone to honor our tradition of anonymity by not taking screenshots, recordings, or sharing personal information outside this meeting. Thank you for helping us create a safe and welcoming environment for us all. And a special nod to all of our people who have been helping in the background. We have dozens and dozens of tech support, over 100 speakers. This is the first time we've done this, so just think back to the first time you did step four and step five or your first spending plan. There might be a few bumps in the road, so bear with us if we run into those little issues. Let us begin with a moment of silence to remember those who still suffer from compulsive debting, both inside and outside these virtual rooms. And please join me in the language and wording of your choice in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant us the
God,
serenity to accept the
accept
things we
the things
cannot
we
change,
cannot change,
courage
courage
to
to
change
change
the
the
things
things
we
we
can,
can, and the wisdom to
and
know
wisdom
the
to know
difference.
the difference.
Thy will, not mine, be done.
So I'd like to introduce Helen O., who will read the 12 steps of Debtors Anonymous.
Thank you so much, Roger. Helen Detter, so grateful to be here today. The 12 Steps of Debtors Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over debt, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Ten, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. and 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. We try to carry this message to compulsive debtors and to practice these principles in all our affairs. So much.
And to read our 12 traditions, we've asked Rob B. Rob, please go ahead.
Thank you, Roger. I'm Rob B., a grateful debtor and secretary of the GSB. The 12 traditions of Debtors Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on DA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Three, the only requirement for DA membership is a desire to stop incurring unsecured debt. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or DA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the debtor who still suffers. Six, a DA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the DA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every DA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Debtors Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, DA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Debtors Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the DA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and all other public media. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rob. As we celebrate 50 years of Debtors Anonymous, we pause to reflect on the remarkable journey of this fellowship. What began with a few recovering debtors gathering together in hope has grown into an international fellowship touching lives around the globe. The founders of DA offered more than just meetings. They offered a message that recovery is possible, that dignity can be restored, and that spiritual principles can transform our relationships with money, work, and life itself. Today, each one of us becomes part of that continuing legacy. Each meeting we attend, each newcomer we welcome, every act of service we offer, and every honest conversation we have helps DA into the future. The future of DA is not somewhere far away. It's being created right now by all of us together. So we will have three speakers who will share their experience, strength, and hope. And our first speaker, I'm privileged to announce, is Merrill. And Merrill has been a member of Debtors Anonymous for many years. I don't have the exact number, and generously offered to share her experience, strength, and hope with us. And she's sharing on a theme, a legacy of hope from our founders to the future of DA. So please join me in warmly welcoming Merrill. And I'll just check with Andrea. Are you providing a countdown clock for the speaker?
Yes, I can. Please refresh my memory. How long will you be speaking, Meryl? And what are your time reminders that you'd like?
We have up to 12 minutes. How about somebody could let me know like at 7, and then it would 2 minutes remaining.
Okay.
Merci beaucoup. Merrill, I'm so excited. I was almost going to forget my name. So I was going to say my name was Andrea. Anyway, Merrill, compulsive debtor, spender, business owner. And I'm here because I'm not all there. And that's why I keep coming to DA. So I actually came into DA March 25th, 1985. I was a corporate vice president and I was homeless. And I didn't know what was going on in the world. And I feel like I got here by accident, but nobody gets here by accident. And the reason I'm setting this up is I was kind of, some people say, well, that's an unlikely candidate to be in DA. It doesn't matter. And I had a friend who used to say, DA is not a respecter of park avenue or park bench. It doesn't matter where you came from. So, I had a lot of things that said I shouldn't have been here, but when I was a little girl and I got an allowance, my mother used to say that money burned a hole in my pocket. I don't know if you had a mother or grandmother who said that kind of thing to you, and whether you said it in French or German or Chinese or Japanese. So there's a long history of me not behaving in any kind of fiscal responsibly w way. Anyway, I came in, I'm homeless. I'm living in a room in the Upper West Side of Manhattan in my brother and his girlfriend's apartment, where they hadn't renovated this room. The window didn't close. There were bats in the wall, and I was living on a broken box spring mattress. I wasn't living on the street, but that's the situation I was in. Later, they started calling that couch surfing. That's a noble way of saying it, but it was an ignoble way to function. My ex-husband's creditors were suing me at the time. It was a mess. And my now sister-in-law was working in another program, and she heard about DA and she said she wanted to go. Maybe we should go together. So I went to help her. I'm homeless. She has a home. But what's wrong with the picture? I go and I meet John H. So I meet him because he helped me. When I collapsed at the end of the meeting, I had no idea what you guys were talking about. You were talking, as far as I was concerned, you were speaking Swahili without a translator. And I don't speak Swahili. And so when I went to get up at the end of the meeting, my knees buckled under me, and John H. was there and hauled me back to my feet. And he kept saying, keep coming. So I did go back. The same thing happened the next week. So, and then there was another meeting. This was in the West Village, in a hospital setting. It was a very good place for a debtor to be in a hospital as a beginner. Probably should have been incarcerated in the hospital. I would have probably got this message a lot faster. And then I went to another meeting, which is pretty the birthplace of DA. It was St. Ignatius Loyola on Park Avenue on the Upper East Side. And I walked in there and my knees had stopped buckling, but John decided taking me under his wing, which meant the meeting after the meeting. And a lot of things happened in the meeting after the meeting at the diners, where I heard basic information that I had not been able to get in the meeting, where John would say, somebody said, can you leave the tip for me? This is a DA person. Can you leave the tip for me and I'll catch you with the cashier and I'll give it back to you. He said to me, see, Meryl, don't use other people's money. That's not what we do. Said, oh. So I hear that in the moment with an example. And you know what? It sank in. For a person who always has her dukes up saying, I know, but I didn't know when I got in here. But John knew that, and he gave you in a primer version, like a fourth grader could get that. And that's what I felt like. And in fact, that's where I stopped growing financially because it was the first time I had a savings account and I didn't have another savings account until I tried to get married when I was in my 20s. And then I didn't have another one until I actually got into DA because I was allergic to spending. Money was burning a hole in my pocket. I did not know what was wrong with me. John knew what was wrong with me because it was wrong with him. And he'd had enough experiences and challenges. Anyway, I became his. Once I could demystify with his help, which another thing he told me is get on a cash basis and everything will be resolved. And I thought, I got that too, because I have an allergy to plastic.
7 minutes, Meryl.
Thank you. If I use plastic, I break out in debt. So I don't use any kind of plastic. I mean, I wasn't even allowed to use a debit card in the beginning. My pressure relief group said no. It's too dangerous for you. You shouldn't do that. You should carry the green stuff. And that's kind of the basic information I got. So I must have done 200 pressure at that time, pressure group meetings with John H. And John H. told me some ways to do it and some ways not to do that. So they were called pressure groups for a reason at the time, because we had to get pe through people's thick skulls. And I observed how people got transformed in a single meeting and got the message. And so after 200 meetings with John H. and every meeting that existed in New York City that I went to, and not debting, at like the 1 year mark, John H. says to me, "You're now going to chair some meetings." I said, "Oh, this is ridiculous. I can't do it. I have no idea. I have a master's in statistics. It does not matter. I knew nothing. I couldn't manage a checkbook. I didn't have ridiculous." So he said, "No, you're going to lead the meeting. I'm going to help you. I'm going to tell you what to do, so you won't stumble and fall." And I carried the message because there were a lot of people who were what we now call unhoused that were so ashamed of it. There was a guy came to the meeting with me, and John said, "You need to go talk to him." Because at the end of the meeting, he had to go to the corner of Broadway and 69th and pay a loan shark, otherwise they were going to break his knees. These are the kind of stories I was faced with, you know, corporate vice president, whatever. I needed to hear this. I'm the down and dirty debtor. So John got the message. I'm 2.5 years in the program. I just get elected to the General Service Board. 3 weeks after I'm on the General Service Board, Jerry M., who wrote a book that many people have read, wrote an article for the New York Times, and we got 30,000 pieces of mail. What do we do with 30,000? We didn't have an office. We had a mailbox. So quickly we had to put together, we brought bags of mail to meetings and asked people to respond to 10 or 20 or 100. People's spouses were responding to this. People on the board brought meetings, you know, brought them home and did the letters way into the night. We're here saving lives. And in that early board, we established an office. We got somebody to work in it. It was like put together with good intention, gum, and whatever else. And it worked. It worked. And you know, the feeling of the gift of desperation, I saw how widespread this was around the world. And I thank my lucky stars that I was in so much trouble that I came in. So John's, you know, he's running the meeting, he's the chair at that time, and we're yelling. Of course, we're yelling about money on the board. And so what else would we yell about? We would, you know, we yell about money. But we had a beautiful spiritual advisor, priest, who eventually ended up marrying my husband and me. He didn't marry us, he allowed us to marry each other. And we were stumbling, right? And on the board, I saw that it is not about getting this perfect. It's about showing up and staying in the canoe. That's what it taught me. That's what DA has taught me throughout the world. It's like, what am I saying yes to instead of what am I avoiding? Because that vagueness that plagues all of us, that's, I can't, it will not coexist with the actions that DA taught me to take. And John's voice is in my head all the time. And yeah, I'm just like very emotional just thinking about it. So I've got a John voice in my back of my head, like, say this now, Meryl, because he used to do that all the time. It's like, you know, the spouse is here. Talk to the wife. It's like, oh my God, I have to talk to the wife. Okay. So, all right, John, what do you want me to say? So the idea that this is some sort of self-help program, a get-rich program, has got to be beaten into a state of reasonableness, because this will not save lives. What saves lives is saying, you don't have to do anything alone. We're here to help you. Please find a power greater than yourself, whether it's a group of debtors, the great outdoors, whatever you choose it to be. So for me, I came in highly agnostic to DA. How could this have happened to me, you know, like such a good person or something, and have a master's degree in statistics? How could this happen? So I just simply say, because this is the kind of thing that John would say, just say this prayer, show me the way. So DA has been showing me the way for a very long time. Now, this sounds like a great success story, but guess what? You can, this disease is still, they usually say about another program, you go to the meeting and your disease is in the parking lot doing push-ups. or at the gym doing planks. For me, I got to a point where I was doing too much service, and there was a twist. We this wonderful little manual came out. If you're a volunteer or you're a, a speaker at this conference, don't make this about, like, so how great this is, how great your great story or be too entertaining. And I read that and I thought that's so important because I started to lose my way. This is about 17 years ago. I had two parents who were dying. They lived 100 miles away. I'm going 200 miles round trip 3 times a week. I'm teaching at night, running a business, and I stopped going to DA meetings. I made a lot of money that year. So this isn't about the money, but I incurred $120,000 of IRS debt. Was so ashamed. I didn't want to come back to DA. My parents died anyway, and I didn't want to come back to DA, but the phone meetings at
One
that
minute.
time, thank you so much, were so beautiful. And I came back into phone meetings, got a new sponsor, got a pressure relief group. I'm hearing John say, don't rely on what you know. Let us, again, love you or teach you or be with you until you can find your way again. And that's what happened. So, my abstinence date is June 1st, 2010. Again, after 25 years before that. But I have this model of early DA that allowed me to be a beginner again, which was great. We were stumbling. We weren't doing it all right. Like the East Coast and the West Coast were agitating with each other. Like we want to, at West Coast wanted to do it faster. New York wanted to do it slower. That sounds ridiculous, like twisted, but that's what it was. It all
Time.
worked out. Thank you. It all worked out. And I'm here to say that because I owe my life to DA. Thank God it's been around 50 years. And I'm going to keep coming for the next 50. Thank you so much for the invitation to speak today. I'm so honored. Happy anniversary, everybody.
Thank you very much, Meryl, for your powerful and inspiring message. I would like to introduce our next speaker, Papa Willie, who I believe is joining us from California, and he will also share on our theme, Legacy of Hope, from our founders to the future of DA. Welcome, Willie, and can you let our timer know how you would like your time to be announced?
Yes, 10 and 2. Okay. Hi, I'm Papa Willie, and I'm a debtor, and not fancy, and just a plain old debtor. I don't say that I'm a compulsive debtor. I am an under-earner. I don't say that I'm somebody who likes to shop. I'm just don't want to get fancy and let you know that I am a debtor, and that's the way I can continue to stay recovered. Okay, I want to thank Bliss and the GSB committee for asking me to talk today. It's just an honor and just a privilege to be able to be here and share what has happened to me through these years. Meryl, thank you for your great share. I didn't get to know John. John was gone by the time I came in, but a good friend of mine, Sean from New York, used to talk about him all the time. But I came to DA. After coming to my other program, I was in such a bad place. I got here, I had about $40,000 in unsecured debt and another $70,000 in a construction loan. That sounds like peanuts to people today, but that was in 1992. I came in September 1992, and I haven't incurred any unsecured debt since then. I came in and I had learned from my other program that when there's a service commitment come up, put your hand up. So I learned the only way I was going to stay sane and sovereign in these rooms was to put my hand up. So I got busy. I stayed here, but I was open, started a meeting and it's still going in Monday night Pasadena, back in 1990. Three, as I came in 92, and worked out a while. I became the GSR for that meeting, and in the year 2000, after I had been a delegate in my other 12-step program, I came to DA, and I was I attended my first conference in the year 2000 in Albuquerque. I had come to three, I was three as a GSR and seven as a part of the member of the General Service Board. When I got here, every year it appeared that the members of the GSRs in the area was always trying to raise funds for this, raise funds for that, raise funds to get to the conference. So I thought after my first year at the conference, my second year, they made me chair of the conference committee. And during that process, I started to work on a way that may help, that I thought may would help debtors, raise funds to get here. So I brought that idea to the board, and I kind of mentored and founded the John H. and said it was John Henderson Scholarship Fund. That was in year of 2003. And the board accepted that recommendation and made it a practice. And that's, and I'm really proud to be able to feel that I've done something to help some debtor comes in who can't get to conference. And because of that, the members of the board asked me to come on to the board. That was in Minneapolis. I came on the board, and I've had three. First time I was a nominating committee chair. Then I went out and tried to get other members to go on the board. I became the assistant treasurer, then the board treasurer, the vice chair, and then chairperson. And I'm the only person who looked like me that's ever been a chair of the General Service Board. I was the first to do that. I was also the first one to look like me to be an Al-Anon delegate. So it's just a pleasure that if you try to walk the walk and walk like you talk, people see that and they don't see anything else. And when I look in your eyes, I always say to you and me, when I'm on the stage looking in the meeting, looking in your eyes, I see the one thing in yours that I see in mine, and that's that me too. So I got here, and I got work, I got busy. After we did the fund, one of the other things we did while I was on the board was we created a road trip, and that way the board would go out to different areas and carry the board and carry the message that way. Then later, I also thought it would be a great idea for us to have the office manager to attend, because Concept Four talks about the participation. My head's going crazy now, but the right of participation. And what they mean is that not just what we think about in the meeting, the right of participation to share. It means you want to have all branches of your service structure together at one time at the World Service Office. And that's why you have the area delegates, GSRs, the board. And now if we don't have the office manager there who deals with this program every day, then we're losing a big part of our program. So I recommended to the board to bring the office manager, and I hope they're still doing that. Secondly, another thing we got to do, we would meet in college campuses when I got here. And the last one we met was at, was it in, no, it was in Minneapolis at a college in Minneapolis. And the next year, the board decided they would try hotels, and we had the first conference in a hotel in 2024 up in Sacramento. Another issue that happens when we, I'm just trying to think of some of the things we did while I was part of the board. The literature committee used to produce all our earlier literature, and it would take time to get it all done. So during that process time, they decided the World Service Conference decided that to hire a writers for our book, we give them the concept, and the literature committee kind of edits stuff and keep it together. And so we hired the writers, and I got to sign the contract to for the writers to do the first 12 and 12 and 12. What I've learned since I've been here that I call Papa Willie's five S's. There's sponsor, steps, service, sponsees, and solvency. Why in that order? Well, you get a sponsor first because you're going to need that to do the steps. And if you do the steps, if your sponsor's gotten you correct, he asks you to get into service. And that's what Bill talked about. You know, he couldn't stay sober until he went talk to Dr. Bob. So it's imperative to us to be able to do service. Then my next S is, is as a sponsor, you have get sponsees. And last, if you do those first four, all first four S's, then you come up with a great amount of solvency. That's how we hang on. I want to talk about the last thing that happened while I was chair. Is for years the GSRs would try to get to the conference and try to figure out how what to do and what not to do. So my goal and one of my dreams was to put together a GS to put together a service manual for the group. So myself in my last year, it was myself. It was a couple of people from New York, Alexandra, Gene C, and a friend of mine, Paul S. And yours truly put together the GSR manual for service. My friend Jan, after we got it completed and got it approved at the conference, but my friend Jan, he's the one, he followed me as chair, and the group approved it. And I felt so good. They all called, my whole board called me at that conference, say, "Willie, we did it, we did it, we did it." So I know when I leave here, my dad used to tell me, "Son, it's not what you say, you leave something somebody, but people to remember you after you're gone." That DA service for man is perpetual. So Papa Willie, when he's laying there pushing up daisies, I know that the DA fellowship is still working. Because that GSR service for man is working. One of the
2 minutes.
The one of the last things that happened at that time, we were searching for a kind of a theme like A has I'm responsible, Alan, let it begin with me. So in my last conference in 2010, that this was what I read to the group as I left. I said I would like to leave with much gratitude in my closing statement of the WSC World Service Conference in Denver, Colorado, 2010. It's up to me to keep DA alive. It's up to me to reach out my hand to the newcomer. It's up to me to be of service. It's up to me to carry the message to the debtor who still suffers. It's up to me to protect DA's unity. And it's up to me to practice these principles in all my affairs. Therefore, it's up to me to keep DA alive. And with that, I'm Papa Willie. I'm a debtor. And man, I am sure happy that you guys are all still here and carrying the message to that debtor who still suffers. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Papa Willie, for your inspiring words. I'm grateful to have you.
Thank you.
And our third and last speaker I'd like to introduce is Lucille, calling in today from Dublin, Ireland. So, Lucille, how would you like your timing?
7 and 2, please. Okay, thank you very much, Roger, and good afternoon or good evening, everybody. It's about 20 to 6 here in Dublin. You're very welcome to Dublin. Well, very welcome to my sitting room. I'm Lucille, and in recovery circles, I am what's called a bisexual, in that I belong to many recovery programs. My recovery began in 1973 in Al-Anon. So I think the most important thing I'd like to say about my DA recovery is that I learned about myself. I cleaned my act up in other recovery programs, but I found myself in DA. You guys are a tough act to follow. I'm just an ordinary DA member in Dublin, but I have traveled a bit and have experienced meetings in other countries. And the theme, no matter where I went, was in addition to solvency, was service. You know, the two S's just went together. So I cleaned my act up in early recovery and doing the usual things that you do even when you come into DA, you know, paying off the creditors $5 a week over the years, you know, and beginning to feel somewhat like a decent human being again. So fast forward to 2006. I was in Newport, Rhode Island, and some friends of mine in another recovery program were talking about going to a convention. And they were talking about the hotel that we should stay in and the luxuries it offered and the spas and the treatments. And I said, "Oh no, there's a university in that town. Let's go stay on the campus." And one of my friends said, "Oh, Lucille, you're such a deprivationist." And I hadn't a clue what she was talking about. And a week later, she said to me, "Would you like to come to a meeting with me?" I didn't even ask her what kind. I said, "Sure." And we went to Brookline and she said, "This is a DA meeting." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And the topic of the meeting was deprivation. And I sat into that meeting, I melted into the chair, and I felt like I'd put on a pair of kid gloves. I knew what everybody was talking about, and they knew what I was talking about. You see, I never had enough. I always had two jobs. I always owed. I couldn't go on the vacations. There was just never enough. So at the end of that meeting, there was a literature table and they had literature and then they had currencies of hope. And then they had this one on the front that said damaged. So the price was reduced. Of course, I buy the damaged one because it's less price. So straight away, there I am, deprivation less. And so began my journey in DA in 2006. So then there was the numbers, and I thought, well, you know, that's a bit anal. You know, I do big pictures. I'm not, and I thought, well, you know, I believe in 12-step recovery, so I will. And so some nights when I went to bed, I hadn't done the numbers, and I got out of bed, and I wrote the numbers down. And I did this a few nights, and I suddenly realized I'd made a commitment. Not just to the woman who was sponsoring me, but I'd made a commitment to myself that I was going to do this. And somehow, doing the numbers every day, anal and all as it felt, I started to show up for me for the first time in my life. And then came the DA work. And so, of course, you know, naturally, I claimed my recovery to my sponsor and said, "Oh, you know, I've been in recovery for a while now. I'd like to start with Visions." To which she said, "Now listen here, sweetheart, I'm delighted you have recovery under your belt, but this is about the money and it's not about the money, but it's issue specific. So we'll be dealing with your debting and everything that underlines that. So, you know, you'll be a newcomer." I was like, "Oh, okay." And so I humbly accepted that and started. And then there were the categories, and then there was the spending plan and the Excel sheet. I'm like, "Oh my God, you know, I'm not too technically savvy." It took time, but I kept suiting up and showing up. So we would be traveling. So I would go to Newport in the summer times and sort of going into Brooklyn was a long time. And then a few of us set up a meeting in Newport and we would just meet there with sort of weekly. And that was great because we didn't have to travel so far. But all the time, it was that face-to-face contact. It was that sharing. It was that service. It was that. And it was, I was beginning to come out of vagueness. I was beginning to, you know, I wouldn't say get clarity, but things were getting a little clearer. And then, you know, I traveled some and I came back to Dublin. And by the grace of God, there was a guy called Ray W. here in Dublin had set up DA. And there was a thriving meeting on a Saturday morning. And if you're ever in Ireland, it's still going in a different location. Please do drop by. And, you know, I just rolled my sleeves up and just jumped in. And Merle, you were talking about service. I just did service and more service and more service and more service because I wanted what was offered. I wanted the promises. I loved the clarity that I was getting. And then, of course, the taxes had to get sorted and the residency had to get sorted and, you know, all those kinds of things needed to get sorted. And so I was discerning where I should live. And that brought me to London. And I was in London for a year, and there is an incredible meeting in Westbourne Grove on a Monday and Friday. And that was the energy in that meeting was incredible. That's 7 minutes.
Yes.
Thank you. And so I learned a lot from there and thrived on that and brought some of what I'd learned there back to Dublin. And then following that, I was in Toronto where I met Roger. And again, another thriving meeting where I learned a lot about DA and service and all the PRGs that I got to help me to sort stuff out. And then came looking at the retirement thing. And I didn't even know if I had had a pension. And so I had to go around the house as on somebody's suggestion and collect all the stuff about money, either bonds or investments or savings or anything that I did or did not know I had. And it turned out I had a pension. And, you know, so all of these kinds of things took time. And then a few years ago, a friend of mine said, oh, I belong to a retirement group. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I said, okay, I think I might try that. And in the meantime, I go to Nice for the winters. And I'd like to just share a caveat about meetings in the south of France, my experience. In 2008, when the crash happened, we were all concerned about our finances, even at meetings. And there were people sharing about, they were concerned about the subsidies they were getting from the government for rent allowances. 2 weeks later, at a meeting in Cannes on the Riviera coast, I was at a meeting and the sharing was, in yesterday, things didn't go so good. Or I had difficulty sailing the yacht from Fort Lauderdale to Monaco. And I'm like, good God, from rent allowance to yachts and and I got it. It is about the money and it's not about the money. And we all have a difficult relationship with money. And that's what's happened to me in DA is that money has become energy. And just on the retirement thing, I'd like to say I belong to the Forever After, Forever Young Abstinent DA group on the Saturday on Zoom. And the thing about retirement is that things change. And so before it was about jobs and pensions and money and sorting it out. And in retirement, you know, it gets to be about a good life, but it gets to be about sorting out wills and healthcare advocacies and enduring powers of attorney and retirement homes or nursing homes, all because of clarity and not leaving a mess for somebody else to clear up. So I'm extremely grateful to DA that it is about the money and it's not about the money. I'm extremely grateful to the people I met along the way who served on PRG meetings for me, but I am honored for the PRGs that I've had the privilege to sit on where people trusted me talking about their money, where they trusted about talking about their debt, where they trusted me and the other people on the PRM. What an incredible gift that is to be with people exactly where they are and to know that we're living in God's economy and to know that this is a spiritual program and to know that if we suit up and show up and do the service and work the steps, that it is possible to go from deprivation to abundance. And for me, you know, to be able to live with peace of mind for myself, to be able to go anywhere in this world, well, when you face to face was great. So for me, the future then has been about going from face to face to telephone meetings to Zoom meetings. And, you know, from the legacy of what was started from penny pinchers to building capital to John H. sort of putting this program together, I'm extremely grateful because I have peace of mind today and I'm not obsessed with money today. When I lose some money, it's like I didn't have it before. And usually the markets sort of go up and down. I'm no longer obsessed with that. So for that, I'm entirely grateful for the people who traveled this journey with me, for the people who've been there, who did service. And I'm grateful that I've been given an opportunity to do service. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Lucille, for your inspiring words and for your service over all these years. I remember that meeting in Toronto when you came in. So we'll have a few minutes. We have about 10 minutes for questions and answers. And so for the speakers, there's been lots of love shown to you in the comments, but I don't see any questions yet. If anyone has a question for one of our speakers, if you could type it in the chat and indicate which speaker you're directing it to, I will try and ask higher power to point me to the right questions to ask. So let's see here. Question, I'm not sure which speaker, but how do you develop visions and how? So I'll leave that open to any of the three speakers.
So I'd be happy to take a stab at that. Go ahead, Lucille.
No, you go, Mara.
Okay. So I was around when Bill C identified three stages of DA recovery. First, emergency stage. The wolf is at the door. You got an eviction notice. Suddenly you're homeless. Whatever it is, that was your bottom. And it can last into DA for a while. Then there's the maintenance phase where you know what to do. You're still in debt. You may not actually be abstinent yet, but you know what to do. You have a solution. You're working. And then he says, is the vision phase. It doesn't happen all in the beginning. As the vision pamphlet says, which I love the vision pamphlet, it says the first vision is solvency. Can we be solvent? Can we live without incurring unsecured debt? But I heard Bill talk about this with a panel at one of the first, the pre-conferences that they had in New York when I was on the board. He said in his panel, the vision is not something outside you. It's something inside which gets revealed with a world of possibility when we start thinking about what am I saying yes to in the world instead of coming from the glass half empty and the deprivation mindset. So, and we have a great way of trying to let that out, which is these vision board things. So, you know, for me, it was really very powerful. I have the vision board still first. When I did my first one, my sponsor invited me to a vision boarding session. I said, I had a vision a long time ago. I've realized it. No, I'm too old, or whatever I said. And she rolled her eyes. And I went. And I had all these pictures of China. All these pictures of China. Why? You know, all sorts of things. I ended up with a 10-year business contract in China. I started a DA meeting in China. I have sponsees in China. That came from a vision board, and I didn't know what it was. I had no idea. So, like, there's something about trust the process. And so, this is not a how-to from me to you, but rather like what unfolds as we heal through these other two journeys. So, you know that I'm here because I'm not all there. So, if that answer doesn't make sense to you, feel free to throw it, kick it to the curb.
Thanks, Meryl. Lucille, did you want to pick up on that?
On the visions, yeah, I think, you know, for me, when it came to sort of having visions, first of all, it seemed like such a luxury and sort of self-indulgent thing. I was so used to deprivation that for me it was like putting a concept of the higher power right at the very beginning, like making it spiritual right from the get-go, and then sort of picking up pictures and, you know, what was it that I really would like? You know, what was God's will for me in this? And it, you know, solvency became a, you know, a huge part of it. Security became another part of it. You know, service became another part of it. And then there was the self-care stuff and the nurturing stuff. So, but it all, it unfolded. It wasn't like these are my goals and this is what I want to attend. It was understanding that, you know, that I was under the guidance of a higher power, that I had surrendered to God's economy. And so it was with the nurturing kind of gentleness of people who went before me that I was able to explore possibilities for my own life. But they happened in an unfolding way, not a goal-driven, directed way.
Thank you very much, Lucille. There's a question here for Willie. Can you
Okay.
repeat the five S's?
Sure. Sponsor, steps, service, sponsees, solvency. And I have a question. You know, I have a short response to visions.
Please go ahead.
My vision is to never have to go back to the way it was. I just don't want to go back to the way it was when I got here. So what that entails me doing everything that you guys teach me here to keep from going there. And I often share with people when they have trouble with the third step in this word God. I say God is just it's just a word, it's an object. If you want to hear the true meaning of God in recovery, it's mean anybody else other than you. Because what's in between these two ears is the thing that got you here. So you want to listen to anybody else other than what's here. So that's your God. It's anything outside of you. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much, Willie. Lots of questions here. We only have time for one more, and then after the meeting closes, there'll be time for general chat. But here's one for any of the three speakers. What's your experience, strength, and hope on staying solvent one day at a time when you don't know where the money will come from?
I see.
Go ahead, Willie.
Well, yes, keep showing up in these rooms. Don't stop doing what you was doing when you got here. Because like Meryl said, that debt is sitting right out there doing push-ups, just waiting for you to fall. So when you get off of your horse, you put yourself in real trouble. Anything can stop you. So continue to go to meetings. Continue to do all the things that you learned to do when you got solvent, because that's the thing that's going to keep you solvent. And as the greatest example was Bill Wilson, was, and I'm not in AA, but I read the big book quite a bit, is that carrying that message to others. If you're helping others, you get out of yourself and you begin to remember where you came from, and that's how we stay. We have to see that person doing what we used to do to remember that we don't want to go back there.
I also wanted to say something about this idea. It's like that under-earning thing is part of the affliction. It shows up in different ways. Like there's a great definition of compulsive spending, for example, in the compulsive spending pamphlet that says a compulsive spender is a compulsive debtor who hasn't run out of money yet. You know, and so what's the under-earner? Is that the deprivation? I don't know what it is. That's above my pay grade. But I remember in the very first one of my very first PRGs, I had left my corporate job, and I started my own business, and I wasn't earning yet at that level, and I was scared to death. And they said, write down 100 my PRG or then pressure group said, write down 100 things you could do to earn money. And I thought, that's ridiculous, 100 things. That's so stupid. And of course, I started, and I came up with 66. And I had been writing resumes for people in my family and my, you know, their kids and whatever for a long time. So I immediately said, okay, can write my resumes. And people said, oh, good. Can you know, like somebody just gave me a price of $1,500. Can you do it for better than that? And I said, sure, 750. They pay me that day. I wrote 10 resumes in about 10 days. And then all the other work came in because the magic of the earning is once you put action, you know, into it, the universe responds with other opportunities. But if I stay in inaction and passivity, I'm running my own show with my fear. So that's what happened to me. So if someone gives you that suggestion, say, yes, I'll do it.
Thank you, Meryl.
I
Lucia,
have a
would you like
quick
to?
message. Oh, go
Oh,
ahead,
go
Rob.
ahead, Billy. Yeah.
I have a quick message to those of you. Money is my profession, so your profession has no bearing on whether you're a debtor or not. I help you save your money and keep you do the things that you need to do to take care of your IRS debts and stuff like that. But it didn't help me with mine. So it's like the doctor trying to treat himself. Thank you.
Thanks, Papa Willie. And Lucia, would you like to take the last 20 seconds for any?
Well, just for me, and before I was in DA, when I didn't know where the money was coming from and was desperate, I would pray like crazy, absolutely pray, and things happened, you know. So I never starved, and I always had a roof over my head, whether that was couch surfing or, you know, getting a job where I made where I worked. I got through the day. Keep coming to meetings.
Thank you very much. So, thank you all for being part of this historic gathering. So, this concludes session number one of our convention. So, as we close the opening session, may we remember that the legacy of DA is not only found in our history. It lives in every act of recovery. It lives in every member who reaches out for help. It lives in every sponsor, every trusted servant, every meeting, every phone call, every pressure relief group, and every newcomer that walks through our virtual doors seeking hope. 50 years ago, a few recovering debtors planted seeds for recovery. Today, we are the caretakers of that gift, which is now worldwide. And together, with gratitude and faith, we carry this message forward into the future. So pause for a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. We version. God, grant us the serenity.
Serenity.
Accept the things we cannot change. Courage.
The things we can.
And the wisdom
to know the difference.
Thank you.